Axe throwers, famous authors, princes of pop, all we're missing are the elephants and the big top. It's Friday's Playback Daily with me, Gemma Craddock. Here's what's coming up.
I never knew there were so many different types of bikinis, okay? There's under boob, there's every type of boob.
It's insane.
When we start using words about women like that, such as abrasive or strident or bossy or even ball breaking or bitchy, and these are words that are never used of men.
And here's my favorite one. What do you give your poor coffee down a rabbit hole? Hot cross bunny.
Hey, that's great stuff.
I love that.
Nice delivery.
I love
too.
That.
Well, it's the weekend, so let's start with maximum energy. Jedward Unleashed always makes for great entertainment, and the duo didn't disappoint on The Ray Darcy Show. Just wind them up and let them go.
What's up, Ireland? We're still here after all these years with the icon. Ireland, we're here to let you know that 18 to 34 is opening on Monday. We can't wait to get our vaccine. Come on, about time. Let's go. Let's get life back to normal.
This is the longest we've been in Ireland since the whole pandemic, and we're loving it. John's been jumping off every...
I can take a punch
44.
In the arm, so I'm ready for this vaccine. I've been out and about, being athletic, being sporty. I went for a run yesterday. It was so humid. I got back and took a selfie. People were like, Jeannie Mac, looks like you've been training for... bodybuilding competition, but it's all an illusion.
So you've been jumping into the sea as well?
I have. I've been going lots of swimming.
And right. I haven't been able to do any swimming because I'm not allowed to be in close water.
I've seen a lot of seals chilling.
I have three scars healing currently right now.
Oh,
I keep advising
them. After your appendix.
They look like three little tattoos on his
lower. Wasn't able to wear skinny jeans for a good few weeks. I had to be in bed. I'm oiling up the scars. It's all just a bit
dramatic. What a recovery though, Ray. Look at him. You wouldn't think he was.
I was seeing ghosts. I know we don't talk to you about this. Let's move on to other stuff.
No,
we filmed
a new
show.
But here's the thing. How did you do it? Of the skinny jeans, Edward.
Well, I just got a bit baggier, you know.
Yes.
Unbuttoned the bottom top.
He went up a size, you know.
I was like my granny walking up the stairs, like going from each step to step.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was wearing some shorts and I was looking after him. You didn't do anything.
Oh, I did. I'm always looking after him. Today he wanted me to do, I always do his hair. And today he had to do his own hair. I was like, yeah, good luck to you.
You're looking sharp, lads.
Thanks,
Ray. You're looking sharp.
You're looking sharp as well for the viewers.
Yeah,
I was watching a throwback show of you and Dustin, and you had your great hair, brown hair at the stage.
Yeah, poster boy of the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure, there you go.
That's you.
My son keeps saying to me, you know, because he didn't know me when I had hair.
Yeah.
So every time he sees a photograph, he goes, is that really you, Daddy? Is that really you?
You get yourself a little wig there and you slough it back and forth.
When you go out to jump into the 40 foot, do you get any reaction? Do people recognize
you? No, I like literally wet my hair prior, and then I go to Docky Harbour, I go to like different spots on the way.
So incognito, but, sort of.
Yeah. I just think for a lot of men, it's very awkward, you know, when you're swimming and there's people
and it's
watching
so cold.
Your bits and bobs. You're like, don't worry, it's a grower. We posted some pictures. No, it really is. You're going out of the water.
I swear.
You're
six times
to...
more than what you're seen in the pictures.
Fix your shorts before you show your modesty.
Strong and firm. But anyway, no, it's good. When you're in the water, you just want to get in and just stay in there for 30 minutes and look around you and have
then,
the laughs.
Like, now that people are able to get together, the dry rope cult has like, I swear to God, one time we took a turn, there was like about 50 of them all about to go for their swim. It's definitely
a social
scene.
My favourite dry robe is the camouflage one.
What robe? The Ray Darcy robe is what I want to see.
Well, you can buy them in all, like,
Ortiz's been doing
stores,
nature
pennies.
Shows for years now, you know. Come on, Ortiz.
Listen,
the merch.
Speaking of shows, Three Arena, the big show, it's coming to Virgin Media One, and it is called
The Big Deal. And it's the first show. It's great that
they rang up. They were like, Jedward, you guys are a big deal.
Do you know why they got onto you? I've been saying every
100%
time
we manifested it all together. This is the sacred manifesting circle.
Ray was like, last interview, Ray was like, you should be on TV. And we were like,
Is this true? Every time I've spoken to you, I've said to you, you should be on telly.
We have age a day past 21.
Right, every time we come into an interview with you, we literally get a next job gig.
Yeah, right, okay.
So you keep
5%,
us going.
5%.
We all look like glazed donuts in here. Keep it fresh.
It was great to do the show because we know what it's like to be on that stage. And it's just great to think.
Yeah, because you've always been really professional. Everything that we've done, but sometimes the people around you made out that they were doing God's work being around you. But we always turn up 100% sober, always ready to deliver.
Yeah.
So that to go there, we did 9 COVID vaccines. It was filmed over 10 days, massive experience, and they were more than happy.
Big deal. And here's the, I think I know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's a talent show meets a sort of a game show.
Yeah,
and
they got to deliver their talent. It all comes down to how much they believe in their talent, and they can take the deal or they can progress in the competition.
But there's a lot of talent.
The controls and the contestants, so they literally go to their audition, they get the money. Or
we're not going to give away too much, because is doing a similar type of game to the show. But you know what? They're both going to be great. It's good to have different shows happening in life.
But we had great talent. The thing about this show is everyone's talented. So everyone who hits that stage, it's really, really hard to find a critique because there is such a high standard. And the thing about it is someone can be technically amazing, but they're not actually, you're not emotionally connected with the performance. So basically we had contestants where literally it was like, that was the only reason why some of them they weren't achieving what they wanted to achieve in that area. So
but it's good. You gotta be humble. Look at,
like you, for example, you know, like, and you would admit
we're always learning.
You would admit, you know, that your voices weren't the strongest.
No,
we're of the
underdog. No, but we could go on and sing Pavarotti if we wanted. We didn't want to be those singers. Don't worry, Germany's a massive market. We signed the Backstreet Boys. Did loads of touring in Germany.
The thing about
it's all good.
It's great for like to come into your audition. I know we haven't been oh my god voice of our generation, but like thing is, it's good to have to grow from somewhere.
Yes.
If you go in there with a banger, then your standard's
now
so
when we
high.
Play guitar on the Late Late Show, everyone's like, whoa,
the best live show gig on
it's
that
all
late
about
late
growing
series.
In life, Ray, you gotta it keep is. Progressing
I
no matter
you.
What it is
and, Shut up, let Ray
and,
wants to
and you raised an amazing amount of money for the Irish Cancer Society,
everyone involved, we all did together.
Brilliant.
We're glad to be a part of
and
it
and the hair has grown back and it's peroxide on the top, shaved at the sides, just for people who
it's
are
too short for
watching.
Highlights
is it?
It is. But it's really hard because girls would know, they relate.
Right, okay.
Now, but it's good.
Too short for highlights.
It's been a huge
experience. That's a great name for an album. Too short for highlights.
No, because we're not too short, we're actually well endowed.
Well endowed, what?
I don't know what
I'm
saying.
John, what?
I'm just joking. The listeners listening, we're all keeping it sporty, active. Ray's doing fantastic.
This is something, and it's a bit serious, but I'm very interested in it. It's a headline from RSVP? Jedward say plans to help friend have twins through IVF are put on hold due to the pandemic.
You should buy all the magazines.
Yeah, one of our good friends that we've had for many, many years. You know, we have relationships and boyfriends and husbands come and go, but our friendship will always be a friendship. So we've discussed it for a few years and she has frozen her eggs and we suggested that either one of us, whoever works out.
She wants Irish, you know, blood running through her baby. So we have great genes. So.
But I think it's good because me and John, we're at a point in our lives where we're 30 and we'd have to get married or do certain things. I know like it's either John or Edward, but it'd still be a really, really cool kid coming into the world. And it wouldn't just be us. It'd be like we'd help
raise it as
well.
Yeah, be a celebration.
Okay. I want to stop. There's loads going on there, lads. Right. So you're going to be sperm donors for this friend of yours.
Yes.
She has her eggs, which are frozen. Then there will be an embryo. But which of you is going to be the sperm donor?
Well, whoever has the better bits and bobs.
Whoever's the fastest swimmer.
Whichever takes to it.
I think John's going to win that. Because
Ed has
been
getting sick a lot recently, so I think we'll have to go. I think
Ray's
looking at me, making eye contact with
me. The thing about it is the baby would have the same DNA, and hopefully if you had twins, then, I don't know, I think it'd just be cool. Yeah.
Is this a real thing, lads?
100%.
It's been discussed
for many years, and it's never actually, I think we're at a point where we're just like, it's not as... We thought about it a lot. And I even told my mom about this as well. And she...
Before she died, yeah.
Yeah, so she knew all about it as well. But it's only recently come to light.
Because sometimes you talk about things and you keep kind of layering to the conversation. Then you have the conversation again and again. And then you just kind of go, you know what? Actually would be a great thing to do and be involved.
Have you thought about having children?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we never be the best dads. I feel like we have so much to give. And, you know, we want the best for people in general. And I feel... a huge chapter, a huge journey, and I feel, you know, when it comes down to being serious and being a good dad, we can do that.
That's exciting, isn't
it?
It's
real heartwarming. I think
it's really different because it'd be more like just a friendship. It wouldn't be all the dramatics that come with a relationship. Mm. It wouldn't be like a romantic, you know, type of way.
Because even if you're I know, like when we're 29, nearly 30, like what if you're getting into a serious relationship now? You've got to wait, like hang on a few more years to even get going, you know, before, and then you gotta go, geez, this is the one.
I was 48 when I had my
You're like a Rolling Stone.
But the thing is that our friend
all the way to the
70s. Our friend is struggling, so it's not like she can just
is she in a different country? Yeah.
On their side of the Atlantic.
So you would be doing this in America. If it was to happen.
So it'd be two.
Or maybe our team might come in and
have a
look.
It'd be two countries coming together.
No, I know people have been talking about this and let it slip in a BBC interview. But yeah, we do a lot of things in private. And I think
is a very huge possibility. Yeah. Yeah, but it'd be a good thing to do. Like, no. I don't overthink it. I think it's a good option. Yeah.
Okay, so you're judges in this new show, The Big Deal. And it is a big deal for you because you're back on the telly.
Yes, yeah. Right. Yeah. Great. You'll be watching at home on your PJs.
I will. Well, I don't wear PJs, but I think...
You wear your boxers. No. Or T-sponsored boxers.
Tracksuit bottoms.
No, it's going to be good. It's going to be a really good show. Yeah. I think, well, it's going to pick people up and it's going to take people into the, you know, the fall... Okay.
We don't know where the future's going. We hope there'll be more Twitter spats. You know, we slayed some people, but like, it's good to get your word out there. And
yeah,
all the
that's the reason why,
because
Edder had a lot of opinions and we had a lot of opinions on Twitter and social media.
And we are making change, because the thing about it is sometimes you got these politicians and stuff and they're saying things, they've hidden agendas. Me and John just come from a genuine place, and I don't know why someone's calling me. I think the taxi company now has my number and they won't stop calling me.
No, they're probably calling you to tell you you're on the radio.
I know.
Edward, you're on the radio.
We nearly got in a crash on the way here.
No.
Some guy crossed over in the car and the taxi driver was like, oh my God, oh my God. And we all had like literally mini heart attacks with her. That happened on the way.
But you're okay. You're okay.
We are okay. Okay. But you just got to be careful. You never know.
Right.
You
could have been can I ask it with a taste now for TV again? And I know music is always going to be the number one thing. What do you hope to do in the coming years?
Ray,
what's the plan?
When you ever decide to retire, maybe you can pass the baton on to us.
Yeah.
Because we are your besties. And I'm not saying you don't want to give it to one of those other people.
Yeah.
Like, we'd happily, if you want a day off one day, we'd happily present.
Just give us the notes and the topics to cover and we'll have the chat.
But no
about
one could beat you because you're an icon.
I think it's just about expressing yourself and growing. And when you need to be serious, but having the laughs, and then even doing documentaries and coming up with your own shows and just putting your ideas down on paper and bringing it, you know, to life.
Yeah. Well. I think I'll say it again. I think you should be on telly all the time. Can you please say hello to Jedward from the biggest fan, Heather Joyce, age 14.
Hi, Heather
hello,
Joyce.
Heather Joyce. I want to say hello to everyone.
I want to say
Ireland.
Hi to the 14, 50-year-olds who are fans of Jedward, because we have fans of all ages. Yeah. It's okay to embrace
There's
your Jedwardness.
Of all ages, living their life to the max. So shout out to you. And if you're not one of those people, get going, get moving and find that group that you need to go out there and live your best life.
Your tribe. I love Jedward and can't wait for the new show, says Martina.
Thanks, Ray. Ray, I saw you talking about Love Island and the whole situation. Everyone watching that show, take it with a pinch of salt. Relationships don't work like that. You can't talk to girls like that. You can't give the generic pull string doll
quotes.
You
need deep conversations. Get vulnerable. Let the barriers down.
I never knew there was so many different types of bikinis, okay? There's under boob. There's every type of boob.
It's insane.
But like, you wear whatever makes you feel the most jepicness. But just for all the guys, we don't all have abs. We can't all get a spray tan. It's nice to embrace your own body. We don't all look like that.
Can I ask you, would you have done Love Island?
No, I'd go on there and have the chats and be like, he's okay there. Can we all, like, you know...
They're all on it to get the Instagram followers. They get with Nurko. They know if they don't hook up with someone in there, they're like a single.
Yeah, I feel that people on that show, a lot of them have been watching reality for the last 10, 15 years. They live for it. And then being on it, they just know, oh, I'm going to take you for a side show.
I like when someone brings
something. Because we've been in Big Brother and we've been with the reality stars.
Yes.
That their life is a reality and everything they do is reality. And it's very just, one minute they're there, next minute they're conked out, the next minute they want to cause drama. They just kind of feed off. They're just, you know, scheming and it's all very calculated.
I want the best for them, but sometimes when they start giving old script from previous episodes, like, can we bring something new to the surface? Then that, you know, someone's genuine, they bring something new.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
And a lot of
can
people
I ask
live in the gym 24 hours a day.
I have to meet a girl who throws axes and a man who's travelling the country looking for the best garlic dip.
You can bring us along.
You can stay here, actually. You can, because Una's in the booth. Yeah, she'll stay with us. But before we go to commercial break, just on Britney Spears. Did you ever meet Britney Spears?
100%. Yeah, no,
we've danced with Britney Spears.
You've danced with her.
11.
I don't know how much time we have, but to all the listeners, the Congress of America are going to help. Right now, there was an old decision back in the day, and now Britney's kind of going against it, and then they're going to, you know, review the situation.
But I especially think the conservatorship, because she has so much power and so much money, obviously the family want control of that. And I just think she's at a point in her life where she deserves the freedom, and just watching in on it, the whole world. The fact that Bill Cosby's allowed to come out of jail and she's still basically a prisoner.
No, because she's such a creative person. She's always been so honest. Even bringing out multi-platinum albums, being on stage. We saw her in Vegas.
Twice.
And she's been under this conservatorship. Like, she deserves all the way to live her life to the fullest. And the fact that all these people are controlling her every single move, and under that scrutiny, there must be such pressure. And the fact that even when people are in concert, like, is she singing? Is she not singing? Is she dancing? You know, people just need to stop over-scrutinizing her.
Yeah. And the thing about it is, there's loads of these Hollywood stars. You have Lindsay Lohan, Tara Reid. We know Tara as well. We know all the scrutiny that's on these girls.
And
they follow
by paparazzi, and they're like, people are watching me. Of course they're watching
me. And the thing about it is, there's certain guidelines for stalkers, but once you get a camera with you, you're no longer a stalker, you're just a paparazzi. paparazzi, uh-huh. and it gives them different rights that they can start stalking people.
And since there are two Grimes brothers, it'd be a shame not to have two helpings of them. And let's be honest, Ray couldn't get them out of the studio, so there'll be more of them later. Comedian David Walliams has garnered legions of new fans through his funny and anarchic children's books. And on the Ryan Tuberty Show, he took the time to answer fans' questions, but he began by describing his life during lockdown.
How would you describe the last 18 months?
Bit boring.
Yeah, nothing shaking.
Well, I got to spend more time with my son, which I like, because he wasn't at school, so I was homeschooling him. He's 8 years old now. Mm. So I really treasured that. I spoke to my mum every day on the phone. We had absolutely nothing to say to each other because neither of us had been doing anything. What did you have for lunch? Tomato soup. And who was on the one show? That's all we talked about. It was a tough time. And I know it was very, I'm making jokes, it was a very tough time for a lot of people.
Sure.
A lot of people lost people close to them. It was horrible. But I tried to use the time creatively. I had a lot of time with my son, which I loved, and then the rest of the time I was writing books and trying to be as creative as possible. So I felt very lucky that I have a job that didn't require an audience, because I have a lot of friends who are comedians and actors and that kind of thing, and some of them didn't work at all.
Yes.
And so I just felt blessed that this part of what I do is writing books, and it meant that I could just get on and do that.
When you were a boy, were you the messer at the back of the class constantly talking, or were you best boy in the class up the front with an apple?
I was the naughty boy at the back. I'll tell you a story. My metalwork teacher, mm-hmm. we used to do metalwork classes, and because we were just sort of, chipping away at metal, we'd sort of chat. And the metalwork teacher found me so annoying because I didn't stop talking. He used to bribe me with money so that I wouldn't speak. He says, I'll give you £1 if you don't speak during this whole lesson.
But the reason I ask you that is because I'm trying to think of what it must have been like for your son to have you as a teacher, albeit by accident. And were you productive or imaginative or a messer as a teacher? I mean, do you go straight then because you have to?
Well, the thing is, you don't often understand how things are done now. I mean, I know most of us are really old, but, the techniques for sort of, especially mathematics, have changed a lot. So I didn't exactly know how to teach them everything, but I enjoyed the creative stuff.
Yeah.
And I found it quite, like the art stuff, I find very therapeutic, actually, what I mean? Because when you're colouring in something or doing something, it's just, you can't really think about anything else, and you just feel very, very relaxed. And we enjoyed coming up with stories, and he helped me come up with ideas for my books as much as I helped him with his homework. So it was a lovely time, and I think it's a time we'll treasure. I mean, Christmas Day was just me and him together in the house because we couldn't go and see my mum and sister, and we just had burgers and chips, and
Did
we
you?
Watched the Muppet Christmas Carol, and we were so happy. Well, even though it was sad, we weren't seeing anybody, but we were just together, the two of us, and it was a lovely thing. We had crackers, and we just ate burgers and chips, basically, because I can't cook at all, and so I couldn't cook turkey, so I just thought, I'll just give him something he likes.
The Muppet Christmas Carol and chips. Sounds dreamy. And Ryan rejoiced at having another Muppet fan on the show.
I love the Muppets. Yeah, I'm quite obsessed with the Muppets. I just took delivery today of a pair of Kermit the Frog and Stan Smith Adidas shoes.
Magnificent.
I'm so excited. But my dream would be meeting the Muppets.
Yeah.
Or being, I mean, I grew up watching the Muppet Show and they had all these amazing guest stars, didn't they? So that would be my dream, to be like in a Muppet movie or something like that. I mean, I'd be so starstruck.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I know that they're puppets, but I would just be like Kermit the Frog, Miss Piggy, Fuzzy Bear. I just love it. And I've been watching bits with my son as well. One of the first things that he loved watching was that the song, the strange song.
Yeah, Manamana.
How does it go?
Manamana,
that's it. Manamana. And he loved that.
Yeah.
I showed it also to Neil Tennant from the Pet Shop Boys, who'd never seen it before, who was also quite charmed by it. But I love that Manamana, because it's like, what is it? Where did it come from?
Yeah.
Who thought of it? But it's sort of so brilliant. It's really surreal. It's very imaginative, the Muppets, and I think we really need a big biopic of Jim Henson really understand his genius.
But I think the Muppets, the reason I kind of mention them is because, you know, your books do something similar, and, you know, it's something Shrek earlier on also does something similar. The Muppets understand children and childhood, but they also understand that sitting beside most children watching a program like that is a suffering adult who doesn't want to watch something so twee that it hurts their face. They want to be able to relate to it a little bit. There's almost a knowing glance left of camera to say, we know you're there too.
Yeah. Well, that's I think they're the best things for kids, aren't they, that can be enjoyed together. And the thing is, as a parent, you normally get to decide what show you're going to see, what film you're going to see. And so you often want to watch or read something that you're going to enjoy too. So I try and make sure that the books are, you know, not exactly have adult humour, but just are not twee and sort of patronising to children, and are a little bit naughty, which I think is some of the best stuff. I mean, I remember being a kid, and you're probably the same. I loved shows for kids, but I wanted to stay up late and watch the Young Ones and not 9 o'clock News and things like that. Mm. And so I feel like children's books, you know, like something I learned from Roald Dahl, is like the sense of them being a little bit forbidden is a good thing. And the Muppets is, very smart. I mean, lots of very sophisticated humour in it. And the characters are very well-rounded, aren't they? I mean, Kermit and Miss Piggy's relationship, for example. I mean, it's an amazing thing that plays out over decades.
Oh, 100%. Actually, and Family Guy went the extra mile to imagine what would happen if they procreated. And, of course, you know how that would end up. But the other thing is things like... Do you remember Michael Parkinson interviewing Miss Piggy and actually blushing because he was embarrassed by the level of flirtation? Yeah. I mean, that's how good they are.
Yeah, I know. They're totally real. Yeah. And and even though, you know, they don't, you know, they're quite sort of simple puppets in a lot of way, they feel like complete characters, don't they? Yeah. And they're all unique. None of them are similar to each other. It's so brilliantly imaginative. And in fact, I might start watching the old series.
Definitely.
With my son, because I think it's all gone on to Disney Plus now, because Disney owned the Muppets. So I'd like to start at the beginning. There's amazing episodes, like Peter Sellers in an episode.
Yeah.
You know, John Cleese. You know, and I think there's loads of old people like Gene Kelly's in the next episode.
And they play it really. I remember interviewing, and I say it just for the purpose of the conversation, but Michael Caine a couple of times, and both times saying to him, I've got to ask you about The Muppet Christmas Carol, because it's one of my all-time favourite films, and how true they are to the Dickens story in terms of script and the telling of it and what have you. And he said that he loved playing that role. He loved, and he played it straight. He just said, look, I just went, Kermit the Frog is a co-star. He's not felt and table tennis balls, you know. And that's the way to do it. They're that good.
I know. He doesn't stand up being Scrooge
exactly.
in any way.
Exactly.
He just does. He's exactly the same performance as if he was in like a kind of, you know, a human version of A Christmas Carol. Yeah, it's brilliant. It stands up so well, that film.
Is Alfred...
And I was really glad... It's really lovely to introduce your son to, you know, things like, oh, this is Michael Caine, you know, and reintroduced him to Joe. Things that you loved, you know, because I think Michael Caine is all those films I grew up watching with my dad, you know, things like The Italian Job and The Crestfile and stuff, and also introducing him to James Bond as well.
Oh, well, then you're into another league, Alty. Is your son, with your new book that we're talking about this morning, Mega Monster, which is just tremendous fun, and it's the school, the teachers, the kids, we could go on all day, but is Alfred, your 8-year-old, is he your muse?
Well, he came up with the title because we were talking about monsters, because he's really interested in monsters, and he said, wouldn't it be great if there was a monster made of all lots of different monsters and it was one massive monster together? And it's called the Mega Monster. And I thought, wow, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
That's a great title. I can steal that, pass it off as my own. And I just thought, okay, what's the story? And so, when we're walking the dog, we often talk about, you know, imaginary worlds and stories and things. And so we started coming up with this idea of this school set on a volcanic island where naughty children are sent, and that the science teacher is turning the kids one by one into monsters, and obviously I did the hard bit. I had to write the book, but there is a dedication in it to thank him for coming up with the title.
But now to the meat of the interview, as David fielded questions from his Irish fans.
Joey Finnerty is 9, And he was on to say, "Does David, do you really hate all headmasters and headmistresses?
No, I don't hate them, but they're good figures to have as baddies in your books because they have power over kids. So it's often a good character to pick on. But yeah, I actually had quite scary headmasters. My headmaster in my junior school, he used to, in the 1970s, and he used to whack the boys over their hands with rulers as punishment in front of everybody.
Oh, not nice.
And then and I remember one time the ruler breaking and him just getting another ruler and just starting again, and it was like really scary. So Mr. Richardson was his name.
Oh, no. Let's hope he's
not listening.
We'll see you in the High Court.
He's not listening. I think you were allowed to do that in those days, but it was really scary.
No, I understand.
It was done in front of everybody. It was even worse, you know what I mean? It was horrible. So I never got hit by a teacher, though, because I never did anything that bad.
I don't believe a word of it.
And then Ryan was sidelined by the fab Jenny from Limerick.
I just wanted to ask him, why did you make Larker in the Mega Monster book all about jokes? Because I love them. And here's my favourite one. What do you give your poor coffee down a rabbit hole? Hot cross bunny.
Hey, that's great stuff.
I love that.
Nice delivery,
too. I love
too.
That. You're very close to me. I mean, you like swimming, you like telling jokes. Well, I thought it would be good to have a lead character who liked cracking jokes, and then I could put lots of jokes in the book. Mm. And I also wanted a reason why a teacher didn't like her and had sent her to this horrible school. And I thought, well, I don't want it to be anything bad. I just want it to be that she likes making jokes because she's funny.
Yeah.
And yeah. I thought then the teacher picked, you know, just wants to get the better of her for that reason. And so that's why I made it funny. And it was fun, actually, to create a character who was funny and made lots of jokes the whole time, because it meant it could. And also the book, there's elements of the book that are a little bit scary, so it's nice to have a funny character in the middle of it.
Okay, here's my second question.
All right.
Why did you make the girl in Awful Auntie Book's parents die in a mysterious car crash?
Yes, David.
Yes,
David. Let's talk about that incident, if you don't mind.
Well, remember, it's not real. It's just a story. But they do, in a lot of children's stories, the parents aren't there, because I think if your mum and dad are there looking after you, you know, nothing bad can happen. But if you're sent off to live with a wicked auntie, then, you know, something bad might happen. So that's why. I know it's a bit sad. But it often happens, like Harry Potter, you know, at the start of Harry Potter, his parents are gone, aren't they? And it just means that the child can have an adventure without their parents being there. But remember, it's only made up, so don't be sad about it. It's just a made up thing. It didn't really happen.
Thanks, Jenny.
Here's another question.
Did you make
Dennis from The Boy in the Dress on anyone you know, or did you just make him up?
I based him on me, really, because when I was younger, my sister used to dress me up as a girl, and I used to play the girls' parts in school plays. So Dennis is a bit based on me, yeah.
Wow.
I know. It's amazing, isn't it? And you're ahead.
Let's go to question 57.
Yeah, Mark. Jenny, you have a great day, won't you? We'll see you soon.
Take care, Jenny.
Bye, Jenny. She did a great job asking those questions. Not easy to come on the radio like that and talk to your favourite author.
No, she's wonderful.
To Tipperary now, and Shane Leonard. Good morning, Shane.
Hi, Ryan.
Are you well?
Yeah.
Who's there with you?
My sister Eva, my sister Robin, my mum and my dad Bailey, and my dad Jetwell.
And how old are you?
I'm 9.
And you finished school for the year?
Yeah, I finished on Tuesday.
You're done and dusted. Okay, the holidays begin, which means you can read books when the rain falls because it's Ireland and it's summer. Would you like to say hello to David?
Yes, please.
All right, then. And shoot with a question, Shane.
What actor was your favourite in the movie?
Did you say what actor is his favourite in a movie of his?
What character, you know, in the movie?
Oh, favourite character from any movie or one of his own movies?
From one of the books he wrote.
Oh, okay.
Oh, right. Okay. Favourite character. Mm. Well, I got to play Bert in Ratburger, who's the villain.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun playing him. He's a very scary villain who turned rats into burgers. And so it was really fun because it was my first sort of villain I really created. And villains are the best parts. You know, actors always want to play the villains. And villains are great for stories because if you're writing stories of your own chain, it's like the villains make things happen. The heroes just react to what the villains are doing. So I had a lot of fun playing a villain. And I try and make my villains funny and scary if I can, because I think that's the sort of perfect combination for a great children's book. So that was my favourite part to play. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's called Ratburger. And it'll be somewhere on your TV.
You've seen it. Ratburger.
Ah, did you like it?
Yeah, and like the funniest part that me and my sisters were when you said you ate your eyeballs and you said anything with the salt and pepper.
The eyeballs with salt and pepper.
Salt and pepper. Yeah, it's delicious. Yeah.
did you ever try eating a rat, Shane? Go on. Yeah, I'll get my coffee. Yeah.
My sister Ava wants to ask a question.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
Go on, Ava. You're doing great.
I have a question. And which was your favourite book that you wrote?
My favourite book that I wrote, yeah, I think, is Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone,
which you did very well on.
I did it under a pseudonym.
Yeah.
My favourite book I've written is my brand new book, Mega Monster, which is out in shops now.
Now that's cheap and nasty. Cheap and nasty. David Williams, get off my show.
Boy in the Dress might be my favourite because it was my first, and so it's always kind of a bit special because it's like I didn't know I could write a book until I wrote that one, and it came out well, and it got turned into a musical.
Yeah, we like that one. We watched
the
movie.
Yes, I like that one. Did you like it?
Yeah.
I love them. I love all
those. What's your favourite book?
Ava?
My favourite book was Ratburger.
Ah, they're big fans of the rats.
Thank you very much. I will pass on your comments to the author.
Okay, Ava, thank you very much. And thank you, Shane. We'll say goodbye to Tipperary now. And text comes in from young Luke Battams, who's aged 8 from Knocklyne. Can't wait to read Mega Monster, which is available in shops, as you say, this weekend. His favourite David Williams book is Billionaire Boy. Loves all the boldness and the rudies in this book. Loves laughing out loud and reading them. His little brother Alex can't wait to start reading Luke's collection. But Luke's question is, if the person who does the drawings draws something that doesn't look like what was in your head when you wrote it, do you ask them to change it? Great question.
Yes, politely, very politely. But what happens is when I write the book and create the characters, what happens is the illustrator just does, they're called like rough drawings of the characters, so does all them first. So before they do the whole book, we have a look at what all the characters look like and we discuss them and think, oh, could this character be put more like this or like that? And then, so by the time the book is illustrated, you know, we've worked all those things out. So, but I'm very lucky because I work with really great illustrators, so Quentin Blake and Tony Ross.
Yeah.
So both of them are so great at what they do, you sort of just can let them get on with it because they know what they're doing. I mean, they're much more experienced than me. Both of them have worked on hundreds of books and lots of books much greater than mine. So they know what they're doing. And so it's a lovely thing. And I can't draw at all.
Grateful. You can't doodle or,
I can't cook. I
can't draw. We're running out of stuff.
I can't do much.
No, but the illustrating and the illustrator are so important to the book, as you know. You very kindly gave me a Grandpa's Great Adventure print, which I have on my wall at home, because they're as standalone print things. They're gorgeous to look at.
Well, you were meant to give that to the children's hospital.
Which I gave then after I took it off my wall to the children's hospital, where it hangs now in the lobby and is admired by the sick children of Ireland on a daily basis.
Well, that was awkward. Moving very swiftly on, Clodagh from Merino had this doozy.
What is your favourite book, like out of all the books in the world?
Oh, good question.
Oh, favourite book of all the books in the world.
In the world, on planet.
I think I'd have to say Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Ah, good choice.
By Roald Dahl, because it's so brilliant. It's everything about it is brilliant. The characters are brilliant. The lesson of the story is brilliant. It's so imaginative. And it just goes on and on forever in terms of popularity. Yeah. You know, there's been two movies, stage show, there's been Wonka bars, Golden Tickets. And there's now going to be a prequel movie about the early life of Willy Wonka. So it just goes on and on and on, and it will never go away. And probably in 500 years' time, when Ryan is probably still presenting this show,
yes,
kids will still love Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
And
so it's a wonderful, wonderful gift to the world that Roald Dahl gave us.
It's funny, you're talking about the parents in books, including your own, but as you were talking to one of the previous children, I was thinking, whatever happened to Mr. Bucket? Because, you know, we had the mother in the movie, she's like, cheer up Charlie with the cabbage and so on. We know there's grandparents coming out the ears, but no Mr. Bucket.
I'll
investigate that. Charlie's dad.
Well, he's in the book.
Is he?
So Charlie's dad's in the book, yeah.
Oh, Charlie's dad.
I haven't ever read it. Charlie's dad's in the book, but he doesn't have much of a role.
That's
because he has to go. He has his adventure with Grandpa Joe, doesn't he?
So the grandpa takes him up.
And the dad is kind of out working all the time.
That's okay. Thank you for the clarification.
He does appear in the book.
Thank you, David. That passed me by in my psychoanalysis. Okay, Devon Kenny's 10. Hello, Devon.
Hello.
And where are you from?
Kildare.
Lovely. Okay, not too far away from us here. How old are you?
10.
And have you read many of David's books?
I've read about 7 of them.
Wonderful. And have you any idea what you'd like to be when you're older?
Well, David actually inspired me to become a writer when I grow up.
Magnificent. Good man.
Oh, that's wonderful news.
And would you like to ask David a question?
I can't wait to read one of your books.
How do you make your book so good and enjoyable for kids and adults?
That is a good question. And thank you for thinking they are good and enjoyable. I just try and think back to when I was 12 years old, because I'm now 49 years old. And so I think, oh, what scared me? What made me laugh? And I try and see the world through the eyes of a child, even though I'm not one. So that's what I try and do most of all. And I think that's what a lot of children's books do well. But I just think write what you would like to read. If you like scary stories, write a scary story. If you like funny stories, write a funny story. You know, because you can only read, if you entertain yourself as you write, the likelihood is that the person reading it is going to be entertained too. So write the thing that you would like to read, and I bet someone else would like to read it too.
Is that okay for you, Devon?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I might.
And good luck with your writing, Devon.
Thank you.
Good luck with your writing. I'm sure you will be it. Just write as many stories as you can now. Just enjoy it and read as much as you can, because you don't really become a writer unless you devour books, and that's what most writers do. They devour books. So read everything, not just my books. Read lots of other much better books as well, and see what's out there.
The wonderful David Walliams on The Ryan Tubridy Show. And as he said himself, repeatedly, his new book, Mega Monster, is out now and is published by HarperCollins. When powerful women such as Ursula von der Leyen and Mary McAleese can fall victim to sexist snubs, it leaves a lot of us wondering what hope the rest of us have. In her new book, Marianne Seacart explores the authority gap and began her chat with Claire Byrne by explaining unconscious bias.
Unconscious bias stems from sneaky little, usually quite old-fashioned stereotypes that have become lodged in our brains almost from birth because of what we see in the world around us and because of the way we're brought up and because of the way the dynamics generally between our mother and our father. And what we tend to experience from very early age is men being in charge. And what happens as a result is we associate male with authority much more readily than we do female with authority. And these stereotypes tell us that women on the whole ought to be a bit submissive and deferential and kind and nurturing and uncompetitive and unself-promoting, whereas men are supposed to be confident and assertive and dominant and showing leadership. And what happens then is that when women who have to show those traditionally male character traits in the workplace, if they want to get on, you know, they have to be confident and assertive and show leadership. If they do that, it makes us instinctively rather recoil. And we feel uncomfortable and we start using words about women like that, such as abrasive or strident or bossy or even ball-breaking or bitchy. Mm-hmm. And these are words that are never used of men who show confidence or assertiveness or leadership. So it makes it very hard for women because, you know, we often say, oh, well, women just need to be more assertive and then they'd be fine. If only it were that simple. It just isn't. Because once they do that, we start recoiling from them.
And you start this book with an anecdote about our own Mary McAleese, former president, of course. And people may know this story about when she met Pope John Paul II. And he went straight past her when he met her and her husband Martin, held out his hand to Martin and said, would you not prefer to be president of Ireland rather than married to the president of Ireland? And she went on then to intervene in quite a strong fashion. But what was it, Marianne, about that story that made you think this is how I'm going to start this?
Well, it was just such an extraordinary lack of respect for a head of state who had come to meet him in a formal capacity in his audience room, and not even to acknowledge her presence, but to go straight to her husband, just seemed to me such an example of this authority gap, which I'm writing about. And the reason I chose that was that I wanted to show that if it even happens to the most successful and authoritative women in the world, then that's a pretty good sign that it's happening to the rest of us most days.
Ursula von der Leyen's response, by the way, when she did speak about that snub in Turkey, she said she was hurt by it. What did you make of her saying that? Because it's not a response I think most of us would expect to hear from a man.
No, but on the whole, this doesn't happen to men. That's the thing, you see. And so men often question even the thesis of this book because they don't see it happening, because it doesn't happen to them. And women notice it a lot. So almost every woman I spoke to when I was writing this book and telling them what it was about said, yes, that is so true. I'm so glad someone's writing about this at last. Whereas men, a few of them would ask intelligent questions and not dispute the premise. But a lot of them would either mansplain to me what the problem was, thereby just demonstrating exactly what I'm writing about, which is they were mansplaining from a position of complete ignorance and challenging my expertise. Or they would tell me that the thesis was actually wrong in itself, as if they had any idea what it's like to be a woman in the world today.
But this book is not, Marianne, about man bashing, because women are as guilty of perpetuating these behaviours that we're talking about as well.
Well, it's certainly true that women also have this unconscious bias. And as I say, because we both grew up in the same world, we have the same sort of stereotypes imbued in our brains. And it's certainly true that some women will think that a man with equal achievement is better than a woman, say, as a candidate for a job. So there's one social psychology experiment where a CV was sent out, a job application for a lab manager position. It was sent out to science professors at leading universities, male and female. And both the men and women thought that the male candidate, even though he had exactly the same credentials, was more hireable and more competent, and they offered him a higher starting salary. Mm-hmm. So, yes, women also do have these stereotypes in their brains. I think they're less likely to exhibit the sort of behaviour that I've been complaining about, the things like ignoring what a woman says at a meeting and then acclaiming a man who says the same thing 10 minutes later, or interrupting women, talking over them. There was a study I found of US Supreme Court justices, and women make up a third of the justices, but have to suffer two thirds of all interruptions, 96% of them by men. So even being a US Supreme Court justice doesn't insulate you from this sort of behaviour.
That's extraordinary. And that's the value in this, that you have all of the empirical research there, along with the anecdotes, to prove that this is happening and happening on a daily basis. It happens to you. And you use the example of being at a conference where you were talking to two colleagues and an assumption was made that you didn't have anything to offer to a conversation about politics.
That was right. So I've been a political columnist for about 30 years, mainly for The Times. And I was talking to two very senior men, former head of the Foreign Office and a BBC foreign correspondent, who know far more about foreign affairs than I do. But I was the expert in that group on domestic politics. And this other man, who knew none of us, came up to us and asked of the two men, and literally turned his back to me, turned to the men and said, can I ask you a question about British politics? Could Tony Blair ever make a comeback? Mm-hmm. So I, as the expert in that group, answered and said not a chance, and explained why. This man couldn't even bear to look me in the eye while I was answering, and then asked a follow-up question of the two men. And eventually I had to sort of touch his arm so he had to look at me and say, look, I'm actually the British political columnist here. I do know what I'm talking about.
Do you know the other problem with that story, though, Marianne, is that I assume from what you say, the two men didn't say anything either to the third man.
No. And actually, that's one thing I would love for to happen is that men start to act as allies to women in this. Men who notice it happening, it would be so great if they called out other men on this, because part of the problem I'm writing about is that some men, at least, just don't really listen to women. And if women complain about this sort of thing, they just think, oh, there they are banging on again. Whereas if a fellow man says to them, look what you just did, and actually this woman is the person you should be talking to, that might bring them up short.
I know you suggest many solutions. Can you give us an overview of what needs to happen?
Oh, I've got 140 solutions in the back of the book. And the trouble is, every sort of slight and obstacle is a small one to women, but cumulatively they add up over the course of a working life, a bit like compound interest, to this huge gap in potential achievement. And so every solution is also a small one. First of all, you've just got to recognize that you're biased. And all of us, however liberal or intelligent or even female we are, probably do nurture this unconscious bias. So it's called unconscious for a reason. But we have to be conscious of the thoughts and actions that it then engenders. So we have to notice when we're instinctively, you know, we walk up to a man and a woman standing together and we instinctively address the man first, that sort of thing. We've got to notice that we're doing this. Notice if we're interrupting women more. Notice if we're a man, if we always end up preferring a younger man to mentor or to bring on at work or to hire. Start noticing what you're doing. Notice what books you're reading. So men are four times more likely to read a book by a man than by a woman, whereas we women are completely even-handed about it. Notice who you're following on Twitter. Again, men are much more likely to follow other men and retweet them than women. Why? Why are they not listening to what women have to say? So there are little things you can do like that that just gradually, one step at a time, can start to narrow this authority gap.
Marianne Seacart on Today with Claire Byrne, discussing her new book, The Authority Gap, Why Women Are Still Taken Less Seriously Than Men and What We Can Do About It. And it's published by Doubleday and it's available now. Now back to Ray and Jedward and two more great guests. And to add to the general chaos of the show, we had features on axe throwing and garlic dip.
Did you know there's a growing community of axe throwers in Ireland? Una McMurrow is from Axe Throwing Ireland and she's in a booth somewhere. We had to stay safe from an axe thrower. Hello, Una.
Hi, Ray. Thanks very much for having me in today.
You're in a booth and I have your axe in my hand.
You do indeed. Yes.
It's a formidable looking weapon.
It's a farm axe.
It sure is, yes. Yeah. Well, for anyone who doesn't know what it looks like, it's a double bit axe, pretty heavy. The head of that one is about 1,600 grams.
Right.
You know, some of them are heavy, a little bit lighter. But basically the idea is that we stand 20 feet from a big wooden target. The bullseye is about 5 foot from the ground up to the centre. And we throw at 2-inch rings. We throw 20 feet the distance.
Wow. Now, John and Edward Jedward are still with us here as well, so they may ask you a question along the way
no
as well.
No problem.
How did you get into axe throwing, Una?
Well, it was through my husband, actually. It must have been sometime in 2016. A friend of his got hold of Swedish throwing axe, and at the time, there was nobody in Ireland had them. And he'd seen it on YouTube, thought it was fun. And Lee, my husband, got a phone call one night inviting him up to a gathering in a shed in Wicklow Mountains, as you do.
Sounds dodgy.
And he got up there and there was about 10 people there, some of whom he'd met before, some he didn't. And two guys decided to start the club, so Ashley Glover and Heath Dawson, and they sort of said hello and welcome to the first meeting of the Irish Axe Throwing Association. And everyone went, what? And they went, well, look, this is what this is and we're going to give it a go and we're going to get a team together and start competing.
So that was the start of it.
So that was the start of it.
Yeah. And your family now are a family of axe throwers.
Yeah, we are indeed.
So there's yourself and Lee and who else?
Well, we've three boys, but the older two, Ben, who's now 18, and Finn, who is 14, do it. Now, Oscar is a bit younger. He's 11. He throws hatchets and tomahawks and things like that.
As opposed to axes.
Yeah.
They're smaller.
Yeah.
I'm just... The lads that's unseen as well. Is it the shaft of it? Is that what they call it? The shaft of the axe, or what do you call it?
Yeah,
the handle,
absolutely.
The handle.
Well, handle.
Handle, right.
How do you get this through customs?
How do we
get our own axe if we want to join this club?
The Dublin Airport crew are all pretty used to us at this stage. But so 2016, the Irish club started, Wicklow Axe Throwers. And then after a few months, 2017, the first World Championships were going on in Germany. So Lee and Ash and Heath and another girl, Kelly, decided, look, we're going to head over there. And at this stage, we didn't really know what we were doing. It was all just learning as we went along.
And where's the designated place you do this in Wicklow?
Well, you can look up Axe Throwing Ireland on Instagram.
And what time of the day do you do this? Early in the morning and late in the evening, just so I know when I'm
screen members. You should screen all your members.
Oh, listen, you have to go through a very serious safety briefing before you're allowed to even hold one of those.
Do you fire with one hand or two hands?
Two hands.
Oh, I see, yes.
Now, there are some people who throw one-handed. So basically, you're holding it with your two hands and you're going, pushing it right back behind your head.
Yes, I'm doing that now.
Yeah, and then firing it overhead. And you're throwing it. Now, it does take some force, but, you know, the idea is everyone has this image of big, hairy men, which most of the guys are. But there's a growing number of women worldwide who are doing it. And we're really trying to grow the women's side.
I'm going
to
stand up here we go.
I wish I could see you now.
Yeah, hold on now. Hold on. Here we go. I'm obviously not going to let it go.
Radio interview. I'm surprised RT let it
in. Feel empowered, like it empowers women knowing they can have this.
It's incredibly fun. It is. There's such a good feeling throwing that axe.
Can I say two things to you, Una? Yeah. Can I say it's a lot heavier than I thought?
Yeah, no, it is. It's heavy.
And I can't understand why there aren't a sort of, you know, a book of health and safety instructions around it. Because
it is sharp, but it's not super sharp, like some of the Australian.
Oh my god, that is sharp.
I'm just revealing it to the lads there.
Don't let them touch it.
Okay, well,
I used to cut logs. Firewood,
granddad used to chop all the wood and we'd have it off the winter. Like, do you ever chop wood with these axes?
Not with those ones, but other axes.
So these are specialists for throwing.
It would have started as a sort of offshoot of the timber industry. So in Scandinavian countries, in Canada, North America,
it'd
be very,
Ireland
very popular.
Now, will you get your pitch ready? Because I'm going to come back to you. But first, I have to go to another man.
Right.
I've lost this. Thomas, how are you doing, Thomas?
Hi, Ray. How are you getting on?
Not too bad. Thomas, sorry I missed your name there for a minute. It's an odd programme today, you have to admit.
Yeah.
And you're just about to make it odder. So explain your quest.
So basically, during lockdown, I was getting a lot of takeout, as I'm sure most people were in Dublin. I mean, there wasn't much else going on with everything being closed. So I found myself getting a lot of takeout, and I, like a lot of people in Dublin and Ireland, love garlic dip. So I was like, you know what, someone should make a page for this. And I looked up and I thought someone had already done it, but then I realised, oh, no one's actually done it. So, you know, I'll just do it. So I just made a page reviewing garlic dips around Ireland.
Dip's the most important thing.
Yeah, it's just blown up recently. It's just kind of taken off, which is really surprising.
Okay, so it's Garlic Dip Guide on Instagram.
Yeah.
How many dips have you sampled?
So since I started the page, I think I've sampled around maybe up to 40 at this point. I've been having it for years, like, and so many I'm like, okay, I love that. Now I need to go back and have it and review it, because I wasn't in review mode then. I was just kind of eating it to enjoy it.
And you went to university to do this?
No, I didn't go to university. Probably more useful than my arts degree anyway.
Do you have a cure for, like, garlic breath? Do you know any of that information?
I saw someone with garlic recently, you put up your nostrils and it clears out your sinuses. That was on TikTok.
Right. Yeah, I have no idea. I know.
This is great. Everyone loves garlic dip. Like, when you get your pizza, you're all about it.
We have some chips in here and we have some garlic dip. And this is your favourite. Tell us about why and where it's from.
So this is cinnamon garlic dip. So this is in Ranelagh and Monkstown. And this was quite strange, because basically everywhere I go now, if I see garlic dip, I have to get it. Like, have to do the
page. This sounds very festive-y.
Yeah, but this is like a brunch place that does lunch, and I didn't assume they did garlic dip.
Can you taste the cinnamon, can you? Because I just smell garlic.
No, the name of the place is cinnamon, John. The name of the restaurant is cinnamon.
But
they must be paying you under the table. Now, it's good you like a garlic dip.
Yeah, their dip is unbelievable. I gave that a 9.
Right.
Jeez.
It was just really nice. Like, I'd rate it on, like, it's thick, you know, not too strong, not overpowering, but not too watery or soggy. I have it here in front of me as well.
Looks so welcoming.
Looking forward to try it again.
Here you go. I'm going to give some chips to the lads there. Yeah, there you go. You're in a bubble.
We all have actually of our own.
No, you're okay. You're in a bubble.
Yeah, we've had 9 COVID vaccines.
Dip away there. Dip away there.
I have to send them down to this booth.
Sorry, Una. Sorry, Una. Yeah, sorry, Una. You're there.
You're leaving me out. I'm not getting my girl a dip.
And I'd imagine Axtron is a hungry enough activity.
It is indeed. It's a fierce appetite.
While they're doing that, Una, the Axtron, will you tell people who you want? What do you want people to do?
Well, what we really love to do at the moment is grow the women's side of things, because it's really in the last couple of years. So the first World Championships were in Germany in 2017, and there were about 20 women throwing there. And the next ones were 2019 in Sweden, and there were about 40 women from all around the world. And in Ireland, there's probably about 10 of us at the moment.
Okay.
But the amazing thing is, you know, women and youths and men, we all throw the same equipment, same distance, compete, you know, often standing side by side. And people think you have to be strong and huge, but I've competed with Swedish women who were in their 60s and 70s, tiny little creatures, and they would absolutely annihilate best of the men.
It's about technique.
Every man listening to this thinks
they're phenomenal.
Things are going to be chopped
off.
No, women are super superheroes. I'd bring it up on a first date, like I do axe throwing, like it really shows that you have to have a firm grip. I'd love a girl that can throw an axe
differently.
Okay,
but if anyone wants to get involved, again, in Dublin, there's a great range for hatchets mostly called Axe Club Dub on Instagram. But they also do double bit throwing outdoors, so people can come and give it a go.
Una.
Yeah.
Hopefully people will get in contact with you, and when we're allowed to go out and about again, I'm definitely going to give you a call. We'll do a bit of axe throwing somewhere that isn't in the studio. Una, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Ray.
Back to John and Edward for the verdict on the garlic dip from cinnamon. What do you think, John?
Yeah, not too watery, not too creamy, just somewhere in the middle. I think it's a light one. You could definitely go and you know, do activities after that. You wouldn't be too burpy.
I'm going to be farting my brains out after it.
Right, sure.
Thanks for sharing. But wrapping up the garlic dip chats.
Go to Garlic Dip Guide on Instagram. That's Thomas's Instagram page. And you can suggest your closest and favourite garlic dip. And you might get out and about, Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, like it's strange because people are telling me to go to these places from all across the country, and it's weird going to somewhere just to try the dip. Like, I have to have a reason to be there, you know? And I'm obviously not trying to get too out of shape because I'm eating so much takeout, and you know what I mean? Like,
dipping some fruit, some healthier items in there. Where else can we get in there?
Dipping fruit and garlic.
I apologise for that suggestion, Thomas. Listen, Thomas, thanks for coming in.
Possibilities are endless.
Garlic Dip Guide on Instagram for those fans of garlic dip.
Thomas Fitzgerald and Una McMorrow on The Ray and Jedward Show. And since I don't think it gets much better than that, I'll bid you a happy weekend. Thanks for listening.